Welcome, truth seekers. It is I once again, Brad Friedman, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Glad to be here. Glad to have you with us coast to coast and around the globe. Yeah, I'm Brad from bradblog.com. Love you to stop on by our chat room over there tonight and participate in the festivities, if you can call them that. It has been a hell of a week, and I'm here all week long sitting in for Mike. Mike and Kathy will be back next Monday, never fear. They're doing well, just enjoying some time off. Although, did you notice the time that they took off? Well, first it was Labor Day, so I had to work on Labor Day. And then Wednesday, Obama's big speech, we had to do live coverage all night long. Well, we didn't have to. We wanted to. It was a crazy night. And tomorrow, 8th anniversary of 9/11. Should be an interesting show. I'll give you some a couple of teasers as we move forward as far as what we've got planned for tomorrow. But I'll tell you, he picked a hell of a week to leave me here, didn't he? We are broadcasting from beautiful downtown Burbank. Lovely and sunny here in the studios of K-Talk AM 1150. You can give us a call as the hour moves on, as the show moves on, at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. And as I said, a hella big show tonight. I mean, a hella big show. Coming up momentarily, Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, used to give the presidential daily briefings to George Bush Sr. So if you ever had a question for a CIA guy, now's your chance to get it in at 877-520-1150. We're going to talk about the torture investigations. We're going to find out if, in fact, torture investigations really would demoralize the CIA. Sure, they may have broke the law, but we can't possibly investigate and prosecute. It would make them sad. We're also going to talk about the new CIA director, Leon Panetta, who I believe should resign, given his obstruction or attempted obstruction into the investigation into torture. Coming up later, Ernest Hancock, libertarian, who you may have heard made some news a week or two ago. Ernest, who I've known for a while, brought a gun to a town hall meeting out there in Phoenix, Arizona. You may have heard about the guy that he was with. Chris is his name. He's the one who brought the assault rifle. Ernie just had a sidearm. He was a big Ron Paul guy. I'm going to ask him what the hell he was thinking. And then, later on in the show, in our third hour, Call the Kids and Wake the Neighbors, we're going to be playing for the first time on the air, on the broadcast air, the first time anywhere, extended clips from the deposition, the under oath deposition, the shocking, frankly, under oath deposition of FBI translator turned whistleblower Sybil Edmonds. She gave a remarkable deposition about a month ago, almost exactly a month ago, the very beginning of August. It was released 2 weeks later in full, including on video, the entire transcript, the video. We ran it on bradblog.com. The allegations she makes of bribery and blackmail of current and former U.S. Congress members are stunning. The sale of nuclear secrets to the black market, as some of these officials, high-ranking officials at the State and Defense Department, not only participated in it, oversaw it, participated in it, she alleges. And, of course, she has some 9/11 things to say as well. But we are talking about infiltration of the U.S. government at the highest levels, some of our highest officials. She is an FBI translator who was listening to wiretaps of targets at the FBI, folks who were suspected of all of these things. And she was gagged twice by the George W. Bush administration. They used the rarely invoked draconian state secrets privilege to shut her up. So she hasn't been able to talk for years. Finally, she was deposed in a case in Ohio, and the Obama administration did not shut her up. And she answered all the questions, and the answers were absolutely stunning. We're going to play extended excerpts from that deposition for the first time on the air anywhere in the third hour, focusing largely on the congressional corruption. Yes, she names names. Yes, they are names that you will know, and you will want to tune in for that. So as I say, call the kids and wake the neighbors. Big enough show for you? If not, tomorrow, 9/11, 8th anniversary, we're going to have John Farmer. He's got a new book out called Ground Truth. John Farmer was the senior counsel, one of the senior counsels on the 9/11 commission. And he's alleging that what the government and the military officials told the told the public and the commission was almost, quote, was almost entirely and inexplicably untrue. Mind you, this is a member of the 9/11 commission saying that what the public was told and what the commission was told by officials, quote, was almost entirely and inexplicably untrue. We're going to ask him about that no matter what Glenn Beck thinks about it. What do you think of that? Because after all, if we take Glenn Beck's advice, he tells us we should, well, what does he say?
America, if you want answers to reasonable questions in this unreasonable time, stand up.
Okay.
Come on, follow me.
We're not going to follow you, Glenn, but we are going to ask reasonable questions in what are unreasonable times, no matter what the hell you say about it, even though you lied and said you wanted people to ask reasonable questions. You didn't, because when Van Jones, of course, Obama's Green Jobs advisor, dared to ask reasonable questions. He didn't even dare to ask. He just signed a petition that, along with family members of 9/11 victims, asking some pretty reasonable questions. You know, things like, why did the CIA, why did the Secret Service allow George W. Bush to sit there for so long after he had heard that we were under attack on 9/11? Seems like a reasonable question to me, not apparently to Glenn Beck. That, despite what he has to say, about
I told you yesterday that there are three principles that this show is going to drum through in the next week.
He means lie.
It may be our mantra for a very long time.
By mantra, he means
question
our lie.
Question with boldness. It's something that changed my life that Thomas Jefferson said. Question.
Really?
Honest questioning.
Really? Did that change
question
your life?
Question with boldness. Then the second step is,
unless
once
you're Van
you
Jones,
find
of course,
the truth, whatever it is, hold to it. Hold to the truth. And the third one,
unless it's the truth you don't like,
without fear.
Without
if
fear.
If you truly ask what Thomas Jefferson called honest questions with a sincere heart,
what will happen?
I have
You'll
found that the answers
lynched?
In all aspects of your life may take you to a very uncomfortable place.
Really? Like what?
Tonight, they're going to take you, and this week, they're going to take you to places that you don't want to go.
What, like the president is,
nobody
a bad guy?
Nobody wants to think that our president is a bad guy.
Oh, what?
When you hear evidence to the contrary, you have a decision to make.
Do you?
Will you bury your head in the sand, refusing to believe because
will
it doesn't fit your political agenda,
uh-huh,
or it just doesn't fit with your comfort level?
Uh-huh, comfort
or
level, Glenn.
Will you hold to the truth, whatever it is,
uh-huh,
so you can be part of the solution and not an enabler to the problem?
Thank you. I will
we
hold to the truth.
We must look at our country
good
not
idea
as today's politics, but the future place where our children will grow up.
Uh-huh.
Will they be free?
Okay. Good advice. Good advice from Glenn Beck there. Ask questions. Hold to the truth. Question with boldness, as Thomas Jefferson said. Unfortunately, Glenn Beck turned around and ran a guy, railroaded him out of office because he dared to ask questions. By the way, Thomas Jefferson's full quote was, question with boldness, even the existence of a God. Because if there be one, he must approve the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. He must more approve the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. Question with boldness, even the existence of a God. Unless you're on Fox News, don't question the existence of a God. Don't question what happened on 9/11, even though one of the commissioners says that what we were told was simply untrue. So I'm going to take the opportunity, hopefully tomorrow, to ask John Farmer, the senior counsel of the 9/11 Commission, some of those questions that Glenn Beck found so incredibly inappropriate. And as he said, made Van Jones dangerous. And he said, well, the FBI, they must be, the FBI is incompetent to allow Van Jones that close to the president. Oh, really? Someone over at Fox News is incompetent to let you that close to a television camera, Glenn Beck. They're not incompetent. They're just cynical bastards, and they don't give a damn about the public airwaves. We do, so we're going to ask questions here tonight with Ray McGovern in a moment, Ernie Hancock after that, and Sybil Edmonds' remarkable deposition. And your calls, all ahead, right here on the Mike Malloy Program. I'm Brad Friedman, sitting in for Mike. Stick with us. Days indeed. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Thanks for joining us. We've got Ray McGovern momentarily. Wanted to remind folks, stop by the chat room at bradblog.com. If you go to the very top item and you click on click here for the chat room, then you'll be brought in there. Agent 99 is keeping an eye on things there, and looks like all the gang is there. It's a very lively discussion over there, so jump on over and say hello. All right, we're joined by Ray McGovern, fellow who I've gotten to know him over the years. Spoke to him originally back in the deep, dark days of the Bush presidency, Bush Jr. Remember that? Ray McGovern is a 27-year CIA analyst. He writes for, among other places, Consortium News, Op-Ed News. He also serves on the steering group of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS. Great to have you with us, Ray. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks, Brad. Good to be with you.
Now, we did talk back in the dark days. It felt like dark days back then. The sun is out a little bit more these days, but frankly, not a whole lot. We're going to talk about some of that. Before we do, though, Ray, give us a quick idea. As a CIA analyst for 27 years, what did you do? You actually briefed George Bush Sr., did you not?
Yes. I worked prominently on two publications that are sort of the supreme genre of the intelligence product. One's called The President's Daily Brief, and the other one is called National Intelligence Estimate. During Nixon and during Ford, I helped prepare The President's Daily Brief. It's a short, maybe 8-9-page document prepared 6 days a week, done the day before, updated overnight. In those days, we used to send it off to the White House without any real personal contact with the people who would be reading it. When Ronald Reagan came into office, we had already approached him out in Pacific Palisades and got him pretty much interested in this kind of treatment. So when he came into office, he said, "Now, George Bush, you and Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, my national security assistant, I want you all to get the same treatment that I've been getting, even as just president-elect." And George Bush said, great, that's what I advocate. Now, do you want to be included? And Reagan said, "Well, I don't know, it's awful early. I'll tell you what, why don't you guys come brief me at 11 after you've gotten the poop from these one-on-one experts?" So that's the way it worked out. Very rarely do we see the president, but we saw all these other individuals 6 days a week, Saturdays at their homes, and we worked in teams. So every other day, every other morning, I'd be seeing some combination of the vice president, secretaries of state, secretary of defense, assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. And then we took the initiative to add the chairman of the Joint Chiefs because we thought that he, too, should be advised of what the president is being told every morning, 6 days a week. So that was really heady duty. It was in those days we were experienced analysts, so we were trusted. And it was one-on-one, and never did we in our wildest dreams think that a director would eventually decide to come down and stand behind us or behind the president as we briefed. That's what Tenet, of course, succeeded in doing, in order to get more face time with President Bush. And you can imagine what a dampening effect, a chilling effect that would have.
That would have a chilling
candor.
That would certainly have a chilling effect on candor, having your boss there. Also, I remember years ago you told me that Dick Cheney had come down to CIA, that was unprecedented to have a vice president actually coming down to the CIA headquarters and, again, looking over folks' shoulders like that. Got to get to a break. We're going to ask you about CIA. The investigation into torture, but if I don't even know if we have time for this one, but my question was, in your day, had you given a presidential daily briefing like the one that Bush got in August of 2001, saying that, you know, an enemy was about to attack the country, would there have been a reaction different than the one you ended up seeing? And I don't know if you can, when George Bush was there?
Well, very briefly, we know what Bush said. He turned to the briefer and said, okay, you've covered your ass now. You can go. That was the attitude. Yeah, lots of what happened when I get back to headquarters, I tell you.
So this was not the way it used to work. Well, let's hope it doesn't work that way anymore with Obama in there. But we're going to talk about Obama, what he's doing. Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst. Much more with him and a big show ahead. Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us. Mike Malloy program, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. Mike and Kathy will be back on Monday. We are speaking with 27-year CIA analyst, now former CIA analyst, Ray McGovern. A lot of stuff I want to talk about with Ray. We'd love to take your questions as well if you'd like to ask Ray. 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. 1150. We talked a bit. We did a bit of hammering on the previous administration. We're probably going to do more in a second on the use of torture by the CIA, the investigation into that. But this may gore the ox of the Obama administration a little bit, because when the news came out that Eric Holder, the Attorney General, was preparing to investigate the previous administration's use of torture, reportedly, Leon Panetta, the new CIA director, threw a few fits. Apparently, he went over to the DOJ, tried to get them to not investigate. Reportedly, he had a shouting match with Rahm Emanuel, trying to get them to not investigate. It seems to me that this is not unlike what happened with the U.S. attorney purge, where you had these high-ranking officials calling up the Justice Department, calling up U.S. attorneys, calling up the White House and Karl Rove, and asking them either to investigate so-and-so or asking them, please don't investigate so-and-so if he happens to be a Republican. I found that was inappropriate then. I find it inappropriate now that Leon Panetta used his insider position to try to stop a lawful investigation into the illegal practice, the atrocious practice of torture. And I think he ought to step down. I think progressives ought to call for Panetta to step down the way we called for these other guys to step down when they obstructed justice. Ray McGovern, am I out of line in making that call when it comes to Leon Panetta?
Well, Panetta has been a terrific disappointment. He came with a fairly good reputation for integrity, and the notion was that he would actually become the CIA director. In other words, you know, somebody who would actually sort of, would you say, direct the agency, you know?
Well, that's his job, is it not?
Well, Well, not if he's a creature of Congress. And that was the real tip-off for me. When he was doing his nomination proceedings, he sort of winked at them all and said, you know, I'm a creature of Congress first and foremost.
Mm.
Well, that's the kiss of death. What does that mean? That means that you're not an intelligence officer and never will be. It means that you shave and you cut and you kind of bob and weave and you make compromises and you work something out. That's not what intelligence is all about.
Did he say that to the folks at the CIA when he came into the job?
He said that to the Senate committee that was approving his nomination.
I see, that I'm a creature of Congress.
You know, we were all watching it on TV.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is that these folks that were ordering and orchestrating and approving the torture,
mm-hmm.
guess where they are now?
Where are they?
They're his senior staff, the head of his operation.
So there has been no accountability.
The deputy chief. Not only that, but John Brennan, one of Director Tenet's chief lieutenants, he found his way down into a very influential post in the National Security Council after being denied a position where the Senate would have to confirm him, namely CIA director or something like that. So what do we have here? We have the foxes in charge of the chicken coop, and we have Leon Panetta not acting as a director, but rather acting as a lawyer. He's arguing the case of these guys that, you know, the stakes are very, very large here, Brad.
Yeah.
Crimes have been committed. He's, you know, the Cheneys of this world are trying to dismiss this as bona fide differences on policy.
Policy difference, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, torture is not a policy. Torture is a crime, okay? Torture is against the law, international as well as domestic law. 18 U.S.C. U.S.C. is not University of South Southern
right.
California.
U.S. Code.
U.S. Criminal Code.
Right.
18 U.S.C. 2441, the War Crimes Act, passed by a predominantly Republican legislature in 1996. Okay? That's one of the laws that they can't get around. Now, let me just
add to that, Ray, by the way, the UN Treaty on Torture, and I know a lot of people say, well, let's avoid the UN. They don't make our laws. Well, in fact, Ronald Reagan signed that UN Torture Convention, and that is a treaty. And as Article 6 of the Constitution says, that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the U.S. shall be the supreme law of the land.
Right.
So there's no question about the legal issues here. If they committed torture, it's illegal, period.
Sure. That's the so-called supremacy clause, and it applies not only to the Convention Against Torture, but to all the other Geneva agreements, and we have the Supreme Court endorsing that concept. So what I was about to say is just to take half a step back and say, yeah, torture is wrong because it's against the law, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, there are laws against torture, but torture isn't wrong because it's against the law. The laws are there because torture is wrong.
Right.
And the whole civilized world agreed on that after World War II when some of these atrocities happened. And up until the George W. Bush administration, everyone sort of agreed that torture was beyond the pale and certainly not as a matter of public policy. So so we have a bunch of fellows now who work for George Tenet. And we have Tenet himself sweating it out because he's demonstrably guilty of perjury as well as other things. You know, never mind torture, rendition, kidnapping, putting people in black holes without telling their wives or children, much less the Red Cross, you know.
Wait, who did you say was guilty of perjury and all of this?
George Tenet.
Oh, Tenet, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
See, there was a kind of a Faustian bargain struck. And when people wonder why George Tenet, this relates to 9/11, so it might be sort of timely given what's coming up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
George Tenet had indeed warned and warned and warned that something really big was up. He tried to get Condoleezza Rice to tell the president. I don't know why he didn't tell the president himself. He saw him 6 mornings a week.
That's right. He was there. Yeah. That's right.
But that's his excuse. You know, he had his hair on fire by all accounts. And Richard Clark and other people do substantiate that. He was really worried that something's going to happen. You referred before to the president's daily brief of August 6, 2001. You know, August 6, what's that, 5 weeks before 9/11, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the title of that? Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., okay? And what did the president do? He went and watched a Little League baseball game. He didn't even ask people to lock the cockpit doors, for God's sake. And that's what the Israelis did years and years before that. All you had to do, it cost $700 to put a secure lock on the cockpit doors. Nobody could get in. That would have thwarted a lot of this stuff. So nothing was done. He didn't know what to do. Condoleezza Rice didn't know what to do. So nothing was done. So then 9/11 happens, okay? Now, here's the Director of Central Intelligence with 34 urgent priority memos for the president warning that something like this is just about to happen, never mind the president's daily brief of August 6th. And, you know, directors of central intelligence keep a little disc of all this stuff, you know. And so Bush is really worried. And he goes to George Tenet and he says, George, I know you told me something like this is going to happen. But, you know, we don't need to go into that. I know you're very embarrassed because people think that you're responsible, and to a degree you were because of all these things that fell through the cracks. So let's make a deal here. I won't fire you, George, if you do what I say and destroy that little disc that you have of all your warnings. Now, George Tenet breathed a great big sigh of relief. Sir, that's a great deal. And before you knew it, 13 days after 9/11, George Bush is out at CIA headquarters with his arm around George Tenet saying, we have the best intelligence service in the world, and largely because of the staff here and George Tenet, who is my man, okay? This, after the worst intelligence disaster and policy disaster, at least since Pearl Harbor. So what does that mean? Well, that means that George Tenet was doing the president's bidding no matter what he asked him to do. Mm. Torture? Yeah, sure. Yes, sir, I can torture. We don't have any interrogators, but I'll round up some. We'll do whatever you want. And not only that, we get to the perjury now. Before the 9/11 commission, here's George Tenet being sworn in with John McLaughlin, his deputy, okay? And he's asked by Timothy Romer is one of the commissioners. And he says, you know, I'd be interested in what you told the president during that critical month of August 2001.
Right.
You know. And so Tenet says, well, you know, I didn't talk to him at all. And Romer says, you never talked to him? And Ted says, no, I took some leave. And, of course, the president was out there in Crawford. And Romer says, well, not even on telephone? No, okay. Now, what happens? That evening, after all the TV cameras are turned off, one of Tenet's little PR people calls the commission and says, you know, George Tenet misspoke. Actually, he did go and brief the president, actually out in Crawford on August the 17th. And then he, you know, he saw him again at the end of August when George Bush came back to town. And, you know, he just misspoke, okay? Now, why did he misspeak? Because he didn't want to, because he was fulfilling his part of the deal, Brad.
Yeah, he was trying to cover his ass in this deal that...
Cover Bush's ass is what's going on here.
Right.
Because, you know, it's really strange. This guy didn't have many smarts. He writes his memoirs, right?
Yeah.
He talks about, on August the 17th, I went out to Crawford. Oh, man, it was such a revelation, such a great time. I got driven around by the president in his little...
So in his own book, George Tenet revealed his own perjury. Let me ask you this, because we're going to have to come up on a break here very momentarily. You say that Tenet destroyed a disc with 34 warning memos on it. Do we know this? How do we know that he destroyed this disc?
I was speaking figuratively here.
Okay, I see.
What he did was agree to destroy his memory about all the... And, of course, Richard Clark knows full well, and you look in Richard Clark's books, and you'll see how many times Bush was
I'm going to pin you down. I want to get an answer on this torture thing and whether it's appropriate. It certainly sounds appropriate to investigate, but whether Panetta was wrong to try to block it and whether it will demoralize the CIA. We're speaking with CIA, 27-year CIA veteran Ray McGovern, much more straight ahead. Including Sybil Edmonds later tonight. Brad, here on The Molloy Show. All right, Brad, back on the Molloy program, broadcasting live from Los Angeles for the next couple of several hours. Ernest Hancock coming up in the next hour, Desi Doyen with the green news, and yes, Wake the Kids and the Neighbors, Sybil Edmonds' unheard testimony. Unheard because no one else in the media has picked it up. We're going to play extended excerpts from her extraordinary deposition given a few weeks ago, the former FBI translator. We're speaking with Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, gave presidential briefs directly to folks like George Bush Sr. And Ray, I'm going to push you to be quick with your answers here because we've got just a couple of minutes, and I want to see if I can get in a call here. But on the CIA, was it appropriate, in your opinion, for Panetta to try to block this lawful investigation into torture by Eric Holder's investigation? Is that the appropriate thing for a CIA director to do?
Well, you and I know that it's not appropriate if he's director, if he's the agent, if he sees his role as the agency's lawyer, which apparently he does, then there's nothing unlawful about him pleading their special causes. The stakes are very high here. His main advisors and his senior staff are liable for prosecution for war crimes. The war crimes statute includes very severe penalties, including capital punishment, for those if under their custody detainees die, and we know that at least 100 have. So this is big stakes here. And let me just leave you with this thought, and that is that I think that Panetta and, to a degree, President Obama are afraid. I never thought I'd hear myself saying this, but I think they're afraid of the CIA. And you look in history. You look to that incredible book written recently by Jim Douglas, JFK and the Unspeakable. He makes a very, very persuasive case that it was President Kennedy's the animosity that built up between him and the CIA after the Bay of Pigs and the Joint Chiefs of Staff because he was reaching out to the Russians and so forth and so on. It's a very well-researched book, and his conclusion is very alarming. And so if you're asking why Obama and Panetta are going very, very kid-glovish with the CIA, I think part of the reason, part of the explanation is they're afraid of these guys because these guys have a whole lot to lose if justice takes its course. And that's why I think Attorney General Holder is to be applauded. I'm really just delighted to have somebody from the Bronx, where I grew up, try to do something to wipe out the blot that Colin Powell has put on the Bronx.
Even though it's a narrow investigation, you still applaud it. But Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, you're saying that there is reason to be concerned about the CIA, that Barack Obama should be concerned. Having been there 27 years, I guess you know what you're talking about, but that's a That's a chilling thought, I got to say, Ray.
Well, read the book, James Douglas, JFK and the Unspeakable. You know, Brad, as you probably know, there are two CIAs, okay? The one that was set up by Truman to give him the straight scoop without any fear or favor, and then this covert action arm, which really doesn't belong in this agency, but is the one that is entitled, so to speak, by one sentence in the National Security Act of 1947, which says the Director of Central Intelligence shall perform such other functions and duties as the President shall direct. That gives the President the ability to use the CIA as his own personal Gestapo, and I use the word advisedly. The only check on that are what used to be called the oversight committees of the Congress. Now they're called the overlooked committees of the Congress.
Indeed.
So it's pretty scary. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and that's real scary. I want to recommend folks, Ernest Hancock wrote a 5-part series over at bradblog.com on the history of CIA torture, alleging that it goes back 50 years and has been used as a tool of American empire. I actually wanted to get your opinions on that, Ray. But we're out of time. We're going to have to do this at another time. I do want to thank you, though, Ray, for all of these years that you have spoken up without fear about the concerns you've had, because I think you have the creds to speak about it. So thanks, Ray. Keep speaking out. Ray McGovern, you can read his stuff at Consortium News, Op-Ed News. Google his name. A lot of stuff out there. Always great to talk to you, Ray.
You're most welcome, Brett.
All right. Whew, boy, that was kind of chilling. All right, we're coming back with Green News, Ernest Hancock, and Sibel Edmonds, Wake the Kids and the Neighbors. Much more straight ahead.